Next up, the audiobook review, and this week we have The Life and Times of the Thunderbolt Kid by Bill Bryson. This has kindly been supplied by our friends at Calibre Audio. If you'd like to obtain a copy, Calibre are happy to supply this free of charge. Please ring 01296 432 339 or email inquiries@calibre.org.uk. The audiobook is narrated by the author. Bill Bryson is a best-selling American-British author known for his witty and accessible non-fiction books spanning travel, science and language. He rose to prominence with Notes from a Small Island, 1995, An Affectionate Portrait of Britain, and solidified his global reputation with A Short History of Nearly Everything, 2003, a popular science book that won the Aventis and the Descartes Prize. Raised in Iowa, Bryson lived most of his adult life in the UK, working as a journalist before turning to writing full-time. His other notable works include A Walk in the Woods, The Life and Times of the Thunderbolt Kid, and The Mother Tongue. Bryson served as Chancellor of Durham University 2005 to 2011 and received numerous honorary degrees and awards, including the Honorary OBE and election as Honorary Fellow of the Royal Society. Though he announced his retirement from writing in 2020, he remains one of the most beloved voices in contemporary non-fiction, with over 16 million books sold worldwide. So here we are back in the studio. I have Debbie with me.
Hello.
And this month we are doing The Life and Times of the Thunderbolt Kid by Bill Bryson. Mm-hmm. It's our first autobiography, isn't it, Debbie?
Yes.
We haven't actually done a non-fiction book yet.
No, we haven't, have we?
So it was interesting for that. And Bill Bryson, of course, is very well known in Britain as being a very funny author and has written several books about Britain and about history and about science as well.
Yeah.
And this is particular book is set in the 50s in America, in Iowa, where Bill was born. And it's concentrated in a quite short period of his life, isn't it?
Sort
of.
Yes. Yes, but I would say it's mostly age about 10 to 12, isn't it?
Yes.
Roughly.
Yes,
yeah.
Most of the action takes place when he's sort of preteen. And it's a great reflection of, I think, of American society in the 50s.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know about you, Molly. I don't read a lot of autobiographies.
I don't at all.
And I'm a bit of a snob about them, actually. I'm not into autobiography as a genre.
Yeah.
I would read an autobiography if I was interested in the person or where they lived or the period in which they lived or their profession. So, for instance, I've read Noel Coward. I really enjoy the Noel Coward autobiographies. I've read one of Stephen Fry's.
I'm like you. I struggle with non-fiction generally. I just think if I'm going to be reading, I want to read fiction.
You want escapism, I suppose.
Yes, you do. You want a story and a narrative and all the things we like about fiction. But as I say, I didn't not enjoy it. I did enjoy it. And again, I don't know Bill Bryson's work that well. I'm familiar with him. From what I could gather, he does it in this humorous style.
Yeah, I believe
sort so. Sort of over-exaggeration about everything. 1950s America must have been very different from 1950s UK.
Oh,
because
yes.
It sounds like there was some sort of huge explosion of consumerism in the States.
Yes, and but it was really hard here. I mean,
yes,
it was post-war.
Absolutely.
I know it was post-war there, but the war didn't affect them in the same way.
No, absolutely not.
So, yeah, I did find that very interesting, and it did really get me thinking.
Yeah. Bill mentions people buying fridges and buying cocktail cabinets and buying all the latest labour-saving devices. And I think in Britain we were probably still going through a bit of rationing, wasn't it? Sort of
yes,
late 40s.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I'm right in saying until 1955.
It sounds about right.
Something
I'm
like
sure
that.
I'm sure our listeners will probably know.
Yeah, sorry if I got that wrong, but I think I'm roughly correct. But yes, a lot of things were still rationed.
Yeah.
And we still had lots of bomb damage.
Yes.
It was really difficult. We had women who'd been used to working during the war suddenly thrust back in this housewife role, and that was really difficult. Lots of what we would now call post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes.
So it was a very, very different environment. So I found it absolutely fascinating because I'd never thought about this before, because Bill is saying towards the end of the book, it's something like, America just became obsessed with buying stuff. And then they realised they had everything they needed. So what were they going to do now? Well, they had to get better versions. They had to get double-sided refrigerators. But to do that, both halves of a couple had to work.
Yeah.
Then they needed more labour-saving devices because one of them wasn't at home to do the laundry or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just a vicious circle, isn't it? And I've always felt I wouldn't want to just be at home. That wouldn't be enough for me. But I do feel it's important for women to have the choice. Well, for everyone to have the choice, in fact. And if that's what they want to do, fine. So what Bill Bryson is saying here is actually, in some ways, it was a bad thing for the woman to go to work. It was a situation of their making. Whereas I just saw that as a good thing that women were allowed to go and do that and have that form of independence. But he's saying it's breeding consumerism. And I just hadn't looked at it that way.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, isn't it? Because you say his mother went to work, and I think, you know, quite a few women in the 50s in the States were now working for that very reason, that you had to have the latest appliance, or whatever that might be. And because this is how sales work, you produce one particular model of something and then you produce a better model of it, and then everyone wants to buy the best model. But it's probably underpinned American society for many years, hasn't it? I would probably venture to say that they're still like that. They still want to get a bigger car, a better car, a bigger house, a house with a pool. And it's that constant need for more that drives the American economy and probably what has made it one of the biggest economies in the world. So it seemed like it had its roots in the 50s when the advent of advertising and TV and radio.
TV, massively, because it's not just the fact there was TV, it was that ability to advertise to so many more people.
Yes, yes.
Whereas I think now a lot of us just walk out when the adverts are on or fast forward them. But at that point, it was almost an art form, wasn't
it? Yes, yes, very much so. And the adverts came across as like mini dramas, and they would interrupt programmes, and you'd go to the cinema and you'd have lots of adverts. So I think, yes, that kind of spawned and delivering a message to the population that you're not a proper family unless you have this particular device or you have to have this kind of car. So that kind of spurned American society for a long time, I think.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and what you might call the American way. But it is really important that that underpins the book, doesn't it? He does talk a lot about...
Yes, you know, it is. It's the functioning framework of the book, actually. Yes, it's about his childhood. And if any of our listeners are interested in Bill Bryson or like his books, I'd imagine it would be fascinating for them to understand his history. For instance, when I read Agatha Christie's autobiography, I've read all of her books and I've read them in order, so I understand the timeline of her books, right? But now, having read her autobiography, I can slot in what I know about her history and how that's impacted on her writing. And I dare say if you're a Bill Bryson fan, you're going to get that from this book as well. So I didn't get that. I still found it very interesting in its own right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, what I hadn't realised before listening to this book was that his father was a journalist, and I'm sure that's really impacted on his career and on his style, because it is a journalistic style of writing, isn't it?
It is, very much so, yes. Every chapter starts with a piece of news from that particular moment. He would pick a piece of journalism from the time that reported that someone had done something or other, and some of them were funny and some of them were quite serious. You're right, it's very journalistic in the sense of taking facts from the day and then embellishing and then telling his story around those facts. Well, let's pause here for an excerpt from the audiobook.
Chapter 1, Hometown. Springfield, Illinois, Associated Press. The State Senate of Illinois yesterday disbanded its Committee on Efficiency and Economy for reasons of efficiency and economy. Des Moines Tribune, 6th of February, 1955.
And there are some very funny sections. I think it might be good to quote the jar story.
Oh, yes, the jar story. Yes, we'll have a quote from that particular section of the book.
Under the sink, my mother kept an enormous collection of jars, including one known as the Toity Jar. Toity in our house was the term for a pea, and throughout my early years, the toity jar was called into service whenever a need to leave the house inconveniently coincided with a sudden need by someone, and when I say someone, I mean, of course, the youngest child, me, to pee. "Oh, you'll have to go in the toity jar then," my mother would say with just a hint of exasperation and a worried glance at the kitchen clock. It took me a long time to realize that the toity jar was not always, or even often, the same jar twice. Insofar as I thought about it at all, I suppose I guessed that the toity jar was routinely discarded and replaced with a fresh jar, We had hundreds after all. So you may imagine my consternation, succeeded by varying degrees of dismay, when I went to the fridge one evening for a second helping of halved peaches, and realized that we were all eating from a jar that had, only days before, held my urine. I recognized the jar at once, because it had a Z-shaped strip of label adhering to it that uncannily recalled the mark of Zorro, a fact that I had cheerfully remarked upon as I had filled the jar with my precious bodily nectars. Not that anyone had listened, of course. Now here it was holding our dessert peaches. I couldn't have been more surprised if I had just been handed a packet of photos showing my mother in flagrante with, let's say, the guys at the gas station. "Mom," I said, coming to the dining room doorway and holding up my find, "this is the toity jar." "No, honey," she replied smoothly without looking up, "the toity jar's a special jar." "What's the toity jar?" asked my father with an amused air, spooning peach into his mouth. "It's the jar I toity in," I explained, "and this is it." "Billy toity's in a jar," said my father, with very slight difficulty, as he was no longer eating the peach half he had just taken in, but resting it on his tongue pending receipt of further information concerning its recent history. "Just occasionally," my mother said. My father's mystification was now nearly total, but his mouth was so full of unswallowed peach juice that he could not meaningfully speak. He asked, I believe, why I didn't just go upstairs to the bathroom like a normal person. It was a fair question in the circumstances. "Well, sometimes we're in a hurry," my mother went on, just a touch uncomfortably, "so I keep a jar under the sink, a special jar."
Another section I really liked was when he broke his leg.
And he's lying on the ground in the playground and...
People kept passing by and just saying, "Oh, you're enjoying lying down there, aren't you?
Yeah,
you're right, Sonny."
Yes, I think I have that quote here. Let's just play an excerpt from the audiobook.
"The only time I've ever broken a bone was also the first time I noticed that adults are not entirely to be counted on. I was 4 years old and playing on Arthur Bergen's jungle gym when I fell off and broke my leg. Arthur Bergen lived up the street, but was at the dentist or something when I called, so I decided to have a twirl on his new jungle gym before heading back home. I don't remember anything at all about the fall, but I do remember very clearly lying on damp earth, the jungle gym now above and around me and seeming awfully large and menacing all of a sudden, and not being able to move my right leg. I remember also lifting my head and looking down my body to my leg, which was bent at an unusual, indeed an entirely novel, angle. I began to call steadily for help, in a variety of tones, but no one heard. Eventually I gave up and dozed a little. At some point I opened my eyes and a man with a uniform and a peaked cap was looking down at me. The sun was directly behind him, so I couldn't see his face. It was just a hatted darkness inside a halo of intense light. "You all right, kid?" he said. "I've hurt my leg." He considered this for a minute. "You want to get your mom to put some ice on it. Do you know some people named..." He consulted a clipboard. "Mihalovich?" "No." He glanced at the clipboard again. "A.J. Mihalovich, 3725 Elmwood Drive? "No." "Doesn't ring a bell at all?" "No." "This is Elmwood Drive?" "Yes." "Okay, kid, thanks." "It really hurts," I said, but he was gone. I slept a little more. After a while, Mrs. Bergen pulled into their driveway and came up the back steps with bags of groceries. "You'll catch a chill down there," she said brightly as she skipped past. "I've hurt my leg." She stopped and considered for a moment. "Better get up and walk around on it. That's the best thing. Oh, there's the phone." She hurried into the house. I waited for her to come back, but she didn't. "Hello," I croaked weakly now. "Help." Bergen's little sister, who was small and therefore stupid and unreliable, came and had a critical look at me. "Go and get your mom," I said. "I'm hurt." She looked at my leg with comprehension, if not compassion. "Owie," she said. "Yes, owie, it really hurts." She wandered off saying, "Owie, owie," but evidently took my case no further. Mrs. Bergen came out after some time with a load of washing to hang. "You must really like it down there," she chuckled. "Mrs. Bergen, I think I've really hurt my leg." "On that little jungle gym," she said with good-natured skepticism, but came a little closer to look at me. "I don't think so, honey." And then abruptly, "Christ almighty, your leg, it's backwards." "It hurts." "I bet it does, I bet it does. You wait right there." She went off. Eventually, after quite some time, Mr. Bergen and my parents pulled up in their respective cars at more or less the same moment. Mr. Bergen was a lawyer. I could hear him talking to them about liability as they came up the steps. Mr. Bergen was the first to reach me. Now you do understand, Billy, that technically you were trespassing.
So I really liked moments like that.
Yes. I think he starts off the book in a quote, I'm paraphrasing, but I sort of remember, is that my parents were never ever abusive, although my mum did send me to school in capri pants.
Oh, yes. There's one thing I want to talk about. I did something I didn't understand, or something that didn't quite work. The title, The Thunderbolt Kid.
Mm.
He mentions this. Is this his alter ego, is it?
Yes.
But I don't think he really develops this enough.
No.
I don't think it works as a tool. Like, sometimes he's talking about, like, beating someone up, or that was the last thing we heard of him because the Thunderbolt Kid came in and removed his head or something like that.
Yes, or zapped him or something.
Yeah. I just felt he could have done more with that, or maybe just not
bother with it.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yes, I think you're right. I mean, it derives from him finding a sweater that's been hidden in the basement somewhere, and it's got a kind of Thunderbolt sign on it. Lots of children, I guess, have an alter ego or pretend to.
It's not unusual.
You know, so, and obviously there were a lot of superheroes around at that time, but you're right. He dips in and out of it. So I think either he has to be the Thunderbolt Kid all the time, or he didn't really need it, did it?
He didn't need it because it was very amusing.
Yeah, as a device. It wasn't necessary.
Yeah, it wasn't fully developed. Though he does talk about his love of comic books, but kind of not enough. So this is with my writer's hat on, I think this is a thing that could have been developed more or just cut.
Yeah. Yeah, I get what you mean by that. It was a device he like picked up every now and again and then dropped again.
Mm.
So it wasn't consistent. So, yeah, it would have been nice to one or the other, I think. I agree what you're saying there.
Yeah.
Three reasons to listen to this book.
Well, my first one would be if our listeners were alive in the 50s,
yes,
I think would be a really good thing to listen to. Secondly, it's an easy listen, an easy read. Thirdly, if you like Bill Bryson's books, listen to it because it will give context and colour to what you already know.
Yes, I'd agree with that. If you're already a fan, this is a no-brainer. I think you should definitely listen to this book. And as you say, it gives context to his early life. If you wanted, like we've often talked about this, like books that you really need to sit and listen to and concentrate and books which are much lighter and much more of what I call a holiday listen.
This is a holiday book, isn't
it? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Or something to listen to when you're doing the gardening or something like that.
Yeah, something when you don't have to concentrate really, really hard.
And you know what? That's absolutely fine. Yeah, we all read things for different reasons, and I try to alternate a heavier book with a lighter book. And this is, it's a really accessible book.
Very much so. The language is plain and simple. It's got lots of good laughs in it. It's funny. It's very descriptive, isn't it? I could imagine where he lived and what it looked like very well, because he did describe it very well. So it's a nice, easy book. And if you did for a couple of seconds not concentrate,
it wouldn't really matter.
No.
In fact, I did sometimes lose concentration.
I drifted off a couple of times because I was probably doing those very things, like, you know, putting the washing on or something like that while I was listening to it. And I think it doesn't matter because you can then come back into it quite easily.
Yeah, you can dip in and out, can't you?
Absolutely, and not without losing the thread too much. That's not in any way a criticism.
No, I mean, it's what he does, what he does very well.
I think I read one review that said he made a very few anecdotes go a long way. And I think maybe that's probably not
unfair. Yeah, but there's a skill in that, isn't there?
There wasn't a huge amount of material, but what he did have, he wrote very well.
He did,
Made it interesting. So that's probably a skill in itself.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Debbie,
Not at all.
And we'll be back, possibly not next month, but the month after.
Yeah, great.
Up next, birthdays and events from this week in history.